huge opportunity for myself. I feel very, very blessed here to have the opportunity to represent Canada.
Canada head coach Mike Babcock, speaking at the introductory press conference earlier this week. He will be Team Canada's head man as they enter into the World Cup of Hockey coming up this coming September 2016, right? Yeah, so this coming September before the season starts. His assistant coaches, Joel Quenneville of the Chicago Blackhawks, Claude Julien of the Boston Bruins, at least currently of the Boston Bruins, Barry Trotz of the Washington Capitals, and then in a surprise pick, Bill Peters, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, will be sort of that fifth assistant, really standing out by their omission is Ken Hitchcock, who had been a fixture for Team Canada's coaching staffs the last number of years. That's really the big one that's not in the lineup for Team Canada on their coaching staff entering into the World Cup of Hockey. You surprised about Hitchcock not being there, Ez?
Yeah, a little bit, Drew. We talked about it off air. A little bit in the sense that Doug Armstrong is the GM of this team, and he's his GM in St. Louis, and Ken Hitchcock has been part of that brain trust for the Olympics with Mike Babcock and Lindy Ruff and others. So a little bit surprised, but Ken Hitchcock said, you know, he's been around for a lot of these tournaments, and it's time for someone else to get a chance. So it's nice to see Bill Peters. He's done a nice job there in Carolina. That Carolina team, not a lot was expected out of them, and they've been pretty good so far early in the season. Bill Peters has the previous relationship with Mike Babcock and Ken Holland in Detroit, so that's why Bill Peters, part of the reason why Bill Peters is part of that coaching staff now.
You put together your own 2016 World Cup of Hockey roster for Team Canada, keeping in mind, of course, that you cannot select anyone under 25 years of age, as it's part of the under 25 Team North America nonsense.
23?
Pardon me, 23.
Yeah.
23, under 23 Team North America.
For a
America.
Second there, you got me worried.
Yeah, no, 23, I misspoke.
Sagan, is he 24, 23?
Yeah, I misspoke. I apologize. Under 23. So what's your team? Who do you have? Who are your goaltenders? We'll start with that.
Okay.
We'll look at Craig Button put together his team as well. And then we may as well compare it to the 2014 Olympics, as that's the last big sort of Team Canada that was put together.
Yeah.
So who are your three goalies?
By the way, I like that you're starting off with the goalies, because usually we start off with the forwards and then work our way down to the goalies. So I have no problem starting with the goalies. No surprise, Drew, with my starting goalie, Carey Price. He's the best goaltender in the NHL. If you don't have Carey Price as one of your goalies on this team, then you're just mistaken, because he will be one of the goalies.
He will be the goalie.
He will be the goalie. He'll be the starter. The second and third goalies are where you're going to have some disagreement. And I have Braden Holtby as my second goalie. Last year, Braden Holtby played the most games in the NHL. I think it was 72, if I'm mistaken, 72 or 73. But he proved to me that he's a legitimate top 10 goalie in the NHL, and he's done an excellent job early on with the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, so 73 games played the last year. Yeah. 72 starts, 73 games played for the Capitals last season.
He's an excellent goaltender, and he's someone who hasn't had any experience at the Olympics. So when you're talking about Carey Price, we know what he's done at the Olympics. Braden Holtby's a newcomer. Mm-hmm. So for me, he's my second goalie, and my third goalie is Corey Crawford. And, you know, there's been some debate on, as far as third goalies go, do you have Marc-Andre Fleury or possibly Roberto Luongo as your third goalie? Because as we know, the third goalie is not going to play as much as Carey Price or Braden Holtby. You'd expect to see a rotation earlier in the tournament, and then once it gets into the games that have
the
more
elimination
of a meaning,
games,
then Carey Price will be the goalie, unless he's injured. But right now, that's the way it looks. So I've got Price, Holtby, and Crawford, which is a different look from previous years, because Marc-Andre Fleury, Roberto Luongo, Mike Smith, these types of guys have been part of Team Canada at the Olympics or World Championships, and it's a little bit different. But I think Crawford, he's got two cups now. I think he starts to get more credit for how good of a goalie he is. I know the defense in front of him in Chicago is really good with Keith and Seabrook and Jarmelson and all these guys, but I don't think he gets credit enough for being an elite goalie.
You know what? I like your goaltenders there, all of them. If you look at it, the Olympics from 2014, it was Carey Price, Mike Smith, and Roberto Luongo. I think that Mike Smith has definitely fallen off at this point in time. Roberto Luongo, you know, a little bit older at this point. He'll be 37 when that tournament begins. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he still made that team. He's still a very good goaltender for the Florida Panthers. But I think that Price and Holtby are no-brainers, and I agree wholeheartedly, and I'm fine with Corey Crawford being there as well. If you look at Craig Button, he put together his own team on TSN.ca. He went Carey Price, Corey Crawford, and Marc-Andre Fleury. You can make an argument for Price, or for, pardon me, for Crawford over Fleury, Fleury over Crawford. I'm surprised he left out Braden Holtby there. I think Holtby may be a little bit under the radar a little bit still, with the Washington Capitals. But if the Capitals perform like they have been so far this year and really make a run, it won't be long before Braden Holtby is known as probably the second best Canadian goaltender.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Braden Holtby, I think the reason why I put him on there, I think he has the ability to steal games. Mm-hmm. Not that some of the other goalies don't. Marc-Andre Fleury and Roberto Luongo have been doing it longer than Braden Holtby. But to me, Braden Holtby last year was simply sensational. And that's why I think he gets the nod this time. And I think maybe another reason why, he didn't make Craig Button's list, for example, is just because he doesn't have that international experience that the other two guys have.
So your defense, what does your defense look like for the 2016 World Cup team?
Yeah, Drew, for me, there are a lot of returnees from the Olympic team in 2014. I mean, your first pair is going to be Duncan Keith and Shea Weber.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the two best defensemen in the game, along with Drew Doughty. So you got those three on there as guarantees. I've got Drew Doughty on that second pair with Alex Pietrangelo. Alex Pietrangelo's
another returnee from the Olympics.
Yeah, he's another returnee. I don't have Jay Bouwmeester on my team. Jay Bouwmeester and Alex Pietrangelo, of course, were the third pair for Team Canada at the 2014 Olympics. So Keith, Weber, Pietrangelo, and Doughty on my third pair. I've got Mark Giordano with P.K. Subban. And P.K. Subban, as we remember, was the extra defenseman for Canada at the 2014 Olympics. He probably didn't play as much as he wanted to. So that's my top six. And my extra is Brent Burns. And I know that, Brent Burns sometimes gets criticized a little bit because he takes himself out of the play. But this guy has been really good for the San Jose Sharks. He was good last year for a team that didn't make the playoffs. And he's been good again this year. And I think when you look at how good that top six is, there's a lot of offense. They don't need any more offense. But I think if they're not generating enough offense from their D, that's why having Brent Burns as an extra defenseman helps. So, I left a couple of guys off. I mentioned Jane Bouwmeester. The other guy I left off was Mark Edward Vlasic.
Yeah, you took his San Jose Sharks teammate and Brent Burns. I'm a little surprised that Vlasic, that you left Vlasic off the list.
Well, and by the way, I think Brent Burns is a long shot for this team. Mm-hmm. So I think the other six, I mean, Mark Giordano is a guy that wins the Norris Trophy last year probably if he doesn't get injured. And a guy that Craig Button had on his team, TJ Brody.
Yeah.
I mean, if Brody gets on the team, is there room for Brody and Giordano? Is there room for Burns and Vlasic? Probably not. So If you're looking at two guys that I left out that have a really good shot at making the team, it's Brody and Vlasic. And Bouwmeester, I would say, is a bit of a long shot. Another guy, too, getting some consideration that I didn't have on was Brent Seabrook.
And looking at the 2014 Olympic team, you mentioned Jay Bouwmeester not on that, not returning in 2016, Dan Hamhuis and Mark Edward Vlasic from 2014
right.
Olympic team. But, again, a plethora of riches when it comes to the defense. And it'll depend, I guess, we know how much Mike Babcock likes having that lefty-righty defensive pairings. That was a big reason why a guy like Dan Hamhuis made the team at the 2014 Olympics
right.
is because he could play on that left side and not have to worry twice about it.
And Brent Burns is a right shot defenseman, so that is working a little bit against him. So that's why they, the brain trust of Team Canada might decide to go with a Mark Edward Vlasic or a Jay Bouwmeester as the extra defenseman. But again, it'll be interesting to see who they go with because they have a lot of good defensemen to pick from.
Problem that Team Canada really does appreciate having your forward group, Ezzy, for the 2016 Team Canada.
Yeah, the first couple of lines are exactly the same as Craig Button because you just can't not have Sidney Crosby, Steven Stamkos, Tyler Seguin, as your top six in your top six. And Craig Button had Taylor Hall up there with Sidney Crosby and Steven Stamkos, and that might change a little bit, but I've still got Taylor Hall making the team.
Why don't you go with your centermen down? Go from the middle down. Start there.
And there's obviously more than four centermen because there's
a lot of guys on the wing.
There's going to be centermen that have to play the wing, as you mentioned. John Tavares is one of those guys that I know a lot of people have moving to wing. But so up the middle, Drew, I've got Sidney Crosby, Tyler Seguin. I already mentioned. I've got Getzlaf making the team still. I know that Craig Button didn't have Ryan Getzlaf on his team, and I know that he's been off to a little bit of a slow start, even though picked up 3 points
last night
versus Columbus, so he's starting to get going a little bit. So I've got Getzlaf as my third-line center, and Jonathan Toews. I mean, Toews is the best two-way center in the game, in addition to Patrice Bergeron. I have Patrice Bergeron making the team as well, playing wing on that fourth line. That'll be their shutdown line, if you want to call them a shutdown line.
You can call them that. It's again the problem. Like, it's what we saw in Sochi. Nobody could score on Team Canada. Right, didn't matter true. That, you know, Canada only scored one goal or two goals a game. You know, they just nobody else ever had the puck. So it's really easy to win 2-0 if you never give up the puck.
It's ridiculous.
Who are your left wingers on this team?
Well, I should mention I've also got Claude Giroux making the team. He'll move to wing most likely. I mean, there's just too many centers here. And then I mentioned Patrice Bergeron. I've got on the team. So left wingers. I mentioned Taylor Hall. I've got him. I don't know if he necessarily starts on that first line or they. I mean, these lines are going to be completely in flux. Taylor Hall could play on the first line or the fourth line. I've got Jamie Benn there as well. I mean, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin are gimmies for this team. I could see them, as Craig Button had them, playing on that second line. I've got Jeff Carter on the team again. Jeff Carter, I thought, was excellent at the Olympics. At times played with Sidney Crosby. So you might even see Jeff Carter up there with Sidney Crosby and Steven Stamkos as your first line instead of Taylor Hall. So I've got Jeff Carter up there. And then I've also got Matt Duchene playing on the left side on the fourth line. I had Matt Duchene on this team. I know that he might be an extra forward if he does make the team.
Mm-hmm. Made the Olympic team.
Yeah, he did make the Olympic team. So I've got him on the team as well. And then I've got Tavares playing on the right wing.
And who are your other right wingers, sorry?
Stamkos,
yeah.
Giroux,
yep. Bergeron.
Bergeron. So, I mean, you've got a lot of centers there playing right wing, right?
Yeah.
So my extra is Jordan Eberle.
The Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, and okay. I know that might surprise a few people because that means that I don't have Ryan O'Reilly and Corey Perry on the team, for example, which some people do have on the team. So I've got Jordan Eberle there. Jordan Eberle has been excellent at both the World Junior Tournament and the World Championships. He's a guy who just came back from injury, by the way. But I think when you look at who you want as an extra forward, you kind of want a guy that can play all different types of situations. You want him to be able to play center, to be able to play wing, power play, penalty kill. And Jordan Eberle can do that.
Interesting that you don't have on the team from the 2014 Olympics. Obviously, Marty St. Louis is retired since then. Patrick Sharp has left the Chicago Blackhawks, is now with the Dallas Stars. He'll be closer to 35 years old at that point in time, so a little bit older. Chris Kunitz, again, another guy who's at the tail end of his career. He made that team largely on the basis of, you know, people thought of his play with Sidney Crosby. And then the biggest omission I would suggest for you as a Patrick Marleau, you also don't have on the team, but he's another guy who's getting up there in age. Biggest omission, Rick Nash.
Yeah, and I think Nash is going to be a guy who gets strong consideration for this tournament, especially, you know, talking about right wingers, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of, well, I have a lot of players that naturally play center playing on the right side. So wouldn't be surprised if Rick Nash makes the team. Another guy, you know, speaking of centers that would probably have to play wing on this team that I didn't include, Ryan Johansson. And he's a guy that has struggled a little bit, especially with John Tortorella coming in and getting benched in the first game. Johansson's another guy that's kind of become that sexy pick to make this World Cup team and definitely be in consideration for the 2018 Olympic team. But for me, there's other players there that make the team over him and have more versatility than Ryan Johansson.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, again, you know, again, we talked about you could put some people have Tyler Toffoli, Mark Stone on the team. So, I mean, there's a lot of good players that are going to be left off.
One player who clearly would have made the team, but he's only eligible for the under 23 team is Connor McDavid. He, of course, fractured his clavicle. He's out for months. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Expected to have surgery today. He'll be out indefinitely and not week to week. We're talking about months. Don't have a particular time frame, but as I said, plural months.
That is Edmonton Oilers general manager Peter Chiarelli talking about Connor McDavid fracturing his clavicle earlier this week, sliding into the end boards. He's out for months, and a pall has been cast over the entire city of Edmonton, really over the entire hockey community, given how special he had looked in the first, you know, 10, 12 games of his NHL career. A shame that Connor McDavid will be out for the next foreseeable future. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to have funded over 200 organizations in 2014, supporting projects and programs that would otherwise go unfunded or underfunded. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520. Were you watching the game when McDavid slid into the end boards there, Ezzy? Looking at the highlights, you could see immediately it was bad news.
Yeah, I wasn't watching the game live, Drew, but as you mentioned, the highlights were everywhere. And as you mentioned, it's just horrible news. Connor McDavid and all of the hype surrounding Connor McDavid is just great for hockey. The guy is a generational talent, as we know, and he was just starting to heat up. Didn't have any points in his first couple of games, and then he really started to get going. This Edmonton Oilers team was not expected to be a playoff team, at least from the outside. I think internally their goal is to make the playoffs, but I still think that they're a few defensemen away from being a playoff team. But when you see the way Connor McDavid went into the boards, it's just unfortunate because hockey is better with its great players in action, right?
Even if the NHL itself doesn't acknowledge that with some of its scheduling decisions where they feature teams and cities over individual players. Connor McDavid was people were excited to watch Connor McDavid this year. You know, you look at the Jets games, and he might be back for when the Oilers play their one game here in Winnipeg. I think it's coming up in March. I'm not 100% sure. But, you know, he's the one, you know, people when they're doing their season ticket draft, well, I want the Buffalo game when Evander Kane returns, and I want to see Connor McDavid here because they didn't see him in the preseason. He didn't play that exhibition game here in Winnipeg. So people here are really excited to see Connor McDavid, and it's questionable if he's going to be back at that point in time.
Yeah, I don't think he played in that Young Stars game in Penticton either, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
So Jets fans really want to see Connor McDavid. Hockey fans everywhere want to see Connor McDavid. You know, talking about the World Cup of Hockey last segment, Connor McDavid's going to be on the 2018 Canadian Olympic team. I mean, it's a guarantee. You can't keep him off of that team. He's that talented. He's 24th in the NHL in scoring right now, by the way, Drew. Yeah, he's got 12 points in 13 games. Oilers lost their last game without McDavid. The first game, I should say, without McDavid in the lineup, 2-1 to Pittsburgh yesterday. I thought they actually played pretty well, watched a little bit of that game. But you're talking about a guy who, at 18 years old, is already a top six forward, right?
Sure.
And we mentioned, you know, he's been a point per game. Just unfortunate because for this Edmonton Oilers team, they need all of these young stars in the lineup. The good news, and we'll talk to Dave Jamieson of TSN 1260 about this coming up, they get Jordan Eberle back.
Yeah, certainly he's been out really the entire season.
Yep.
He played his first game, I believe, last night against Pittsburgh. And he'll be back in the lineup for the Oilers. But, you know, Connor McDavid's presence in that Oilers lineup did so much more than just for his own performance. He got Nail Yakupov going. He was such a bright light for the Oilers. You thought that they were really turning a corner from what's been a decade of misery at this point in time. Now the Oilers are probably back in the running for the, you know, they're not as bad, but they're going to be have a significant number of ping pong balls in the running for Austin Matthews, and yet again another first round pick.
And you never want to see any player get injured.
First overall pick, I should say. Sorry.
So anytime a player goes down, it sucks. But with Connor McDavid, this isn't how he wanted to start his career, and now he's going to have to be patient, and he's just going to have to make sure that, you know, he follows the doctor's orders, and hopefully he gets back into the lineup sooner rather than later, because as you mentioned, when this guy touches the puck, it's electric. He's got a combination of size, speed, and skill that is just incredible. It's the most skilled player we've seen since Crosby, Ovechkin, and Malkin over 10 years ago, right? So this is a guy that has such a bright future ahead of him. So I just hope that he's not out for as long as the worst case scenario is. It's a serious injury, though,
yeah.
So he's going to be out of the lineup for at least a month.
The same injury that Patrick Kane suffered last February, and you know the original prognosis for Patrick Kane was 12 weeks, and he returned early. He returned 7 weeks ahead, but Peter Chiarelli, in meeting with the media, says not to expect the same quick healing process, because when it comes to an 18-year-old, which McDavid is, the body heals differently and in some regards slower than it does in Patrick Kane's case when he was a fully developed 26-year-old. Here's the quote. Chiarelli said age with regard to bone growth and development also plays into the healing process. It may take longer for an 18-year-old to return than a fully developed 26-year-old. A surgeon is expected to go in, properly set the bone in place, and strengthen the area to prevent further injury. Surgery may, in fact, speed up the healing process in addition to making it stronger. Peter Chiarelli confirmed there would be plates and screws involved, and his understanding is team surgeons are not expecting any surprises. I mean, disappointing for the Oilers, of course, in the course of this season. But as you said off the start of the segment, the Oilers weren't going anywhere this year. They weren't going to make the playoffs. So you err on the side of caution. And if it takes 14 weeks as opposed to 12 weeks, no big deal.
Yeah. They bring him back into the lineup when he's 100% healthy and ready to go, period. They don't bring him back into the lineup if they think that there's any chance that that he could re-injure himself or that he's not ready to handle the physical load of a hockey game, right? So, again, you know, you mentioned that even though the Oilers aren't going anywhere, for fans of that team and across the NHL, it's just unfortunate. There's no other way you can say it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, other young players like Eric Lindros, you remember, had some injury problems early in his career. Sure. Sidney Crosby had some injury problems earlier in his career, and even most recently had some injury problems. So it's happened in the past with young hockey players, but this particular injury just really hurts. It was a collective sigh in the hockey world when Connor McDavid went down with an injury.
It was certainly deflating. You're absolutely right. I mean, you saw comments from, you know, Wayne Gretzky, who said that, you know, it was deflating to him because everybody had been tuned in to watch McDavid play recently because he had just been that good. I mean, you know, I didn't watch every Oilers game, but, you know, if they're on, I was going to watch them simply because he was playing the game at a different level than most everybody else on the ice. He looked like he was playing the game in fast forward for much of the time when he was on the ice. It was amazing that first game that he played against the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, we've already discussed on the program how sort of asinine it was of the NHL to schedule his game in St. Louis in a random, you know, Wednesday or Thursday night. I think the Cardinals were playing baseball playoffs at the exact same time. It was just sort of an under the radar debut. But just watching him, you could see the talent that he showed on the ice each and every time he touched the puck.
Well, that's why we were laughing on the show about that a couple of weeks ago when the first week of the season, Connor McDavid was struggling. I guess that was more so 3 weeks ago at this point. But and then he turned it around and he was getting multiple point games. He has that talent. I mean, I know that some people thought that Connor McDavid was being hyped up a little bit too much, but when everybody is saying that he's a generational talent and you've seen him play over the years, we had Sherry Bassin, former owner of the Erie Otters, on, and he could only speak highly of Connor McDavid. This guy's a humble guy, and he's going to win a scoring title within the next 3 or 4 years. It's going to happen.
Absolutely. Here's the quote from Wayne Gretzky himself regarding the play. "I knew as soon as he went into the boards," Wayne Gretzky said to Pierre LeBrun of TSN and ESPN.com, "they're so fast and big now in today's NHL. It's incredible how fast the game is. From the positive side, I'm just glad the two Flyers players did nothing illegal on the play. It was a hockey play gone bad." And that's truly what it was. It was just guys who innocently go into the boards, and he wasn't able to brace himself in any manner, and he goes in sort of collarbone, clavicle first. And when you can't brace yourself and you run into a big wooden wall, it's going to leave an impact.
Yeah, it wasn't a malicious play, as you mentioned, Drew. It was an unfortunate accident. And you hope that Connor McDavid, again, isn't out for too long. Hopefully it's not 3 or 4 months. Hopefully it's more so, as you mentioned, 8 to 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Oilers fans are obviously going to be counting down the days until Connor McDavid comes back, rightfully so. And again, there's not much more you can say aside from it's just terribly unfortunate because right now he's the most exciting young player in the game. And there's others, Jack Eichel, Nikolai Ehlers here in Winnipeg.
Max Domi, sure,
right?
Dylan Larkin.
And you don't want to see any of these guys get injured. But that's part of the game, unfortunately, you know, being hockey and being a physical game, that type of stuff happens.
Here's more from Gretzky to Pierre LeBrun. He had already shown, about Connor McDavid, he had already shown everyone that A, he belongs in the NHL, and B, he's an elite player. Every time he's on the ice, he makes something happen. Just as important, he thrives under the microscope. He thrives under pressure. And I think he took a lot of pressure off a lot of the other young guys there. They've also been flourishing, or they've been flourishing also. That's as good as I've seen Taylor Hall play and Niall Yakupov. So Connor is definitely a huge part of that group now. That's what is probably so devastating for everyone. Really, too bad of an injury for the Edmonton Oilers. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Dave Jamieson from our TSN Edmonton affiliate, talk more about the McDavid injury and talk about the Oilers in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 2 p.m., the third and final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. facebook.com/legalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Dave Jamieson. Dave is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 Edmonton. I think it's about time we stop calling this program the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and it start to become the Drew Mandel Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. How do you pull that off, Dave?
Oh, it's just incredible clout that I have. I just demanded that I be, you know, I've got that that false sense of importance that some of us in the industry have, and I, you know, make it all about me.
Yes.
You know, I like your show title a lot better than mine.
Fair enough. We appreciate that and always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, Dave. Has the, you know, the gray cloud, the I guess, citywide day of mourning or couple days of mourning, has it lifted? You know, fans sort of come to the realization that, you know, while this is bad news, this isn't the end of the world for the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, and it sure felt like the end of the world for some. We went to air, you know, obviously after the Philadelphia game. It was an unfortunate hockey play, and I, you know, there are a few people that will complain because it is Connor McDavid, and that somehow the two Flyers involved in that there was some, you know, misdeed there. There wasn't. You know, we had people chiming in saying, what's he doing out there on the ice in that situation? I mean, hey, you play hockey at this level. It's a serious injury, but it will heal, you know, relatively quickly and without any issue, we're told. And yeah, the first day or so, it was a real loss. But what was interesting, as bad as it is for Oil fan here who, you know, knew that Connor McDavid, knows that Connor McDavid is going to be the reason that this team gets better, is the reaction from outside this market, because people, as Pierre LeBrun, who was on my show, said, the Oilers had become appointment viewing because of Connor McDavid. You're outside of Edmonton, you still wanted to catch the Oilers because you wanted to see if you were going to catch something special. And, you know, in the 10 or 11 games he played, he was doing special things.
Now, Dave, we know how bad it is that Connor McDavid is out, but the good news is Jordan Eberle's back in his first game against the Pittsburgh Penguins last night. How did he look in his first game back?
Well, like a guy who's been out. I mean, getting his skates underneath him, he is, you know, it was an interesting thing, Drew, because when Jordan Eberle was out, and is obviously as excited as everyone was with the play of Connor McDavid and Taylor Hall, who has had a terrific start to the season, time and again would hear people say, we really miss Eberle. It's a shame that, you know, that McDavid is not here for the return, because then obviously it would add some flexibility, some more, you know, talent to the top two lines, and the ability to have a guy like Jordan Eberle, who is very intelligent with the puck, makes really smart decisions, and is a terrific. He's got a very good shot, but I think he, you know, to use the overused term, thinks the game very well. So he would have been great, you know, however you wanted to deploy him. But it's, you know, you lose one, you get one back, and hopefully, because the Oilers have been, I won't say, you know, bitten by an injury bug. Everybody gets them, but for a team that desperately needs their best to be in the lineup every night, it's a shame they haven't been able to do it yet.
Dave Jamieson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. He's the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, going back to sort of the impact of the McDavid injury, Wayne Gretzky himself, in an article on TSN.ca written by Pierre LeBrun, you know, talked about how good McDavid had made Taylor Hall, and Niall Yakupov so far this year. Do you expect that those players are going to sort of maintain that newfound level of confidence even without McDavid in the lineup? Or do you fear that they're going to revert back to some of the struggles we've seen for the last number of years?
Well, here's the thing. I think Taylor Hall, to me, to my eyes, looks as if his game, you know, he is playing a mature, and he should. I mean, I think this is year five or year six in the league. So this is not someone who, the learning continues, obviously, but he has mastered the game at the NHL level. I would be not concerned about Taylor Hall necessarily. I mean, there may be a, you know, an obvious decrease in some of the production, but it would be Niall Yakupov, who for a lot of people, and maybe the Oilers themselves, look at this year as a, okay, we've invested, you know, X number of years. Yakupov, I think this is year three. Of course, he came in, he had a terrific lockout shortened season and has struggled since then. And he was finding a confidence. He's the kind of player that needs to, I mean, he has to score to be contributing because there are other deficits in his game, notably in the defensive zone. So if a guy like him is not on the score sheet somewhere, he may not be doing all that much. In some occasions, he might actually be hurting you. So I would be concerned about Yakupov, less so on Hall. I think, frankly, with McDavid out, as unfortunate as it is, I think Taylor Hall may be able to use this time to reassert himself in terms of a leadership role because, you know, they're doing it by committee in Edmonton. They don't have a C here. And Andrew Ferentz, who wore the captaincy for the last couple of years, is largely a bit part in the Oilers now and is not part of the long term. So if you put, you know, importance on who wears the C in hockey, I think Taylor Hall, because of his experience and his, you know, success at this level, I think he should be the next captain because it's too much to ask, I think, of Connor McDavid if it's next year, you know, 19, 20, whatever it is. I think that's too much to put on him. Just let him play. Just let him be brilliant. The letters can come later.
Dave, I remember when we had you on in the summer and we were talking about all of the moves that the Edmonton Oilers had made, especially on defense, bringing in Eric Greiba, Griffin Reinhart, signing Andre Sekera to that big contract. Now that we're 13 or 14 games into the season, how much better have those defensemen made the overall team defense of the Oilers?
There are occasions when you go, oh, okay, yeah, that's an NHL defense, and then there will be moments and periods where it's a lot of scrambling. And Greiba, certainly, they like the physicality, and Reinhart is steady. I mean, that I don't think he's ever going to be on a highlight reel, but that's okay. You don't necessarily need that out. They do miss Justin Schultz. And I'm not quite sure. We checked yesterday on when his return is, and I'm not. It may be a couple more weeks. They do miss, as you know, as troubling sometimes as Schultz's defensive zone play can be. There's no doubt that he is missed on the back end for the offense he can bring. They're a better defense, but then they've got better goaltending, and so you know it's a collective effort between Talbot and Anders Nilsson. Nilsson's been a terrific surprise. Talbot struggled. His last game out, he made a couple of errors that handled people thinking maybe Ben Scrivens had returned in the body of Cam Talbot. But I think that'll probably correct itself. And Nilsson has been a huge upgrade as the, you know, they really don't have a clearly defined number one here. So if they've got two, you know, a one and a 1A, and they're both, you know, it's fairly equitable on how they divide the workload, and then I think Edmonton will be okay. Long-winded answer to say defense is better, but it's certainly not, I mean, it feels like a transitional defense. Like some of the bodies you're seeing now will be phased out or moved on, if not before the end of the year, then certainly, you know, before going into next season.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Dave Jamieson talking about the Edmonton Oilers. Dave is with our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, one of the defensemen we really didn't specifically ask you about there is Darnell Nurse. Of course, 7th overall pick a couple years ago in 2013. He's getting into his real first taste of significant NHL action. Is he here to stay? Has he proven that he is now, you know, an NHL defenseman? He's too good to go back to Bakersfield and the AHL?
Yes, he has been, I think, in a maybe a different world. The Oilers, maybe, you know, if you ask them, hey, would you have preferred to keep him down for 10 more games, 15, 20, whatever they determine. But there was a need right away, and he has come up, and they've got Oscar Klefbom, who is and will be terrific, as, you know, maybe all-star capability there, but certainly a really good NHL defenseman for many years. With Nurse, he's just, there's so much to like. He's physical. He skates well. The Oilers do lack some nastiness, actually quite a bit of it on the back end. And he brings that. And you know, I think they probably have taken a look at him and say, well, I don't know what Bakersfield's going to teach him. He's got lots to learn, but let's just toss him in the deep end here because he's grasped his role. I think that there will be times when Nurse may try to do too much, but you know, I think you'd rather have that than someone who's tentative. So he's a real jewel. I mean, they've got two really good young defensemen there in Klefbom and Nurse, but that doesn't preclude them having to go out and improve in that area. But I think they can feel good what they're going to look 5, 10 years, if you can even look that far in sports anymore. But certainly the 5 years down the road, they're going to have a real good back end.
Same question about Leon Draisaitl. He's got called up also from Bakersfield.
He almost scored last night.
7 points in 4 games, so he's certainly putting up the offensive numbers. How has he looked for the Oilers?
Very poised. This is a guy who never appears to be rushed, and that shouldn't be taken as there's no urgency in his game. But he he's a man at a very young age, and he's physically developed. I mean, he's got man strength already. He can hold people off when he's got the puck. He can make smart plays. I mean, he's got terrific hands, obviously. The knock, and going back to Junior, was, does he skate well enough and fast enough? And I think what he's finding, I hope everyone is understanding, it's not always blazing speed. It's speed when you need it, and it's speed to go to the right areas. He does that. He distributes. He is terrific off the backhand in distributing passes if they've got McDavid and Nugent Hopkins and Draisaitl, depending on where they want to put Draisaitl, he's had a really good success on the wing, but he is a centerman by trade. Who's going to, look down their nose at a big centerman who can, there's some versatility there. So I think I think Todd McClellan, the great thing about having Todd McClellan is none of these players are his guys. There's no history. So he is coming in with fresh eyes to Oilers who've been here for some length of time, and also to guys like Draisaitl and Nurse. I mean, he's probably saying, make a compelling argument why they shouldn't be here. They're better than, an Andrew Ferentz in the case of Darnell Nurse. Let's play him.
Dave, last question for you here. You mentioned Todd McClellan, and I know it's only a month into the season here, but has he put his stamp on the team yet, or is it still too early to tell?
Well, in terms of the on-ice product, I mean, this is still very much a work in progress. With Connor McDavid, without him. I mean, it's still a young team in that they don't know how to win consistently, and that's okay. That takes a while. Todd McClellan is, and this is going to sound like I am slagging, and I guess in some senses I am, the Dallas Eakins, and Todd Nelson, who did an admirable job, if not a good job, filling in last year, after Eakins was fired. The Oilers have lacked, they've got really good people behind the bench and in the front office in Peter Chiarelli. It finally feels as if there are real professionals, experienced and really good at what they do, in the right jobs in the Edmonton Oilers organization. And I'm not speaking, a lot of people can't get past the Kevin Lowe, Craig McTavish, former Oilers, that whole thing. I get that when the team was as bad as it was an easy stick to grab and hit the Oilers with, is look at all these old Oilers. It's an old boys club. It's not anymore. And over and above that, it's these guys are pros, and they're not instantly going to put them in the playoffs. But when Todd McClellan speaks, you think, okay, that franchise appears to be in really good hands right now. And you didn't get that feeling for many years.
Dave Jamieson is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260. Yes, his ego has run amok to that degree. Dave, always appreciate your time, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the 2016 Hockey Hall of Fame eligibility class. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday afternoon, the Jets and the Flyers puck drop, 6 p.m. tonight at MTS Center as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Of course, Hustler and Lawless follow us, Rick Ralph, with the pre- and post-game show and the three-headed monster of Bayak, Knighty, and Edmonds with the call of the game tonight on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to shoes to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Yeah, we got to give a shout-out to that other guy who's usually on the show, Richie.
Yeah, no, we don't. He's not here. You know, out of sight, out of mind.
No, he's in Minneapolis right now, and he's going to see an excellent game tomorrow. That Vikings team looks better than they've looked in a long time, and the Rams are pretty good too. So,
well, he's going to see Adrian Peterson against Adrian Peterson Jr., who's Todd Gurley.
Yep.
And, I mean, Todd Gurley looks fantastic in his return from a serious knee injury that he suffered in his final year of college. Drafted high by the Rams, they weren't sure what they were going to get out of him this season. What they've gotten out of him is just a tremendous performance and a fantastic running back battle tomorrow afternoon between the Rams and the Vikings. I believe you can see that game on CTV here in Winnipeg, as most CTV usually shows the Vikings games, given our ties to those between the Vikings and the city of Winnipeg, with a ton of Vikings fans, of course, residing here in Winnipeg.
Love Teddy Bridgewater. We saw his last game as a Viking at TCF Bank Stadium, and they really are excited about Teddy Bridgewater. He was a high draft pick for them. So it's always great to see the Vikings, because they're not going to catch the Packers most likely, but they probably will be a playoff team this year.
They should be a playoff team in the NFC, which isn't very good. I'm not I'd be surprised if they were able to catch the Packers, but the Packers lost last week to the Broncos.
Their first loss.
First loss. They have a tough matchup again this coming tomorrow afternoon in Carolina against the unbeaten Carolina Panthers. Yep. You lose that game, Vikings win their game, all of a sudden you're tied atop of the division.
Maybe the Vikes catch them.
Well, you still have the home and home with the Packers to come. They've actually flexed the, I believe the Packers visit Minnesota. I don't know if it's next week or the week after. I can't remember off the top of my head. But they moved that game to the 325 window as a marquee NFC battle.
Okay.
So certainly the Packers and the Vikings, the border war between the Wisconsin and Minnesota, which will be...
Dairy versus Lakes?
Dairy versus Lakes, sure. You can do beer versus Lakes. Yeah. Anything along those lines will certainly work. Talk about the 2016 Hockey Hall of Fame class, which is, of course, the induction ceremony for the 2015 class will be held on Monday.
Yep.
It'll be available. You can watch it on TSN. And next segment, we're going to talk about the 2015 class with Bob Duff of the Windsor Star, who covers the Detroit Red Wings, because there's certainly a Michigan-heavy influence in this year's class. But you look at next year's class, and it's really not a great Hall of Fame class next season, and so you wonder if that, you know, the sort of the lack of top end talent, especially compared to like this year, which has Lidstrom and Pronger and Fedorov, if you wonder next year's class is if that isn't the opportunity for guys who sort of been on the fringe there to maybe get in, a guy like Theron Fleury, maybe even Curtis Joseph, who has the fourth most wins in NHL history, if he's able to crack the lineup. Eric Lindros, does he get into the Hall of Fame? You know, next year's class is sort of a bit downwards, so you wonder if the logjam is cleared up a little bit as a result.
Well, I think some of that has to do with just some of the elite players didn't retire 2 or 3 years ago. By the way, Marty Brodeur and Marty St. Louis both retired in the last 2 years. Those guys will go into the Hall of Fame for sure.
Absolutely. They're not eligible yet. That's
not
why they can't go in yet.
But both of those players will go in, especially Brodeur.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about him. Greatest goalie ever. So you mentioned some of the players. I'm going to tell you who I think should get into the Hall of Fame here. You didn't mention him, but it's a player who was only eligible in 2014, but it is a player that I think should be in there. That's Mark Recchi.
Really?
And I know that Mark Recchi might not have as many Stanley Cups as you'd expect for the amount of years that he played.
He's got three Stanley Cups.
He's got three, and he played for 20-plus years. Mm-hmm. But he's a guy that consistently was a 50- or 60-point guy. And we're talking later in his career, played, as we mentioned, over 20 years, 1,533 career points. That's 12th all-time. So, I mean, right there. I mean, for me, the consistency and the fact that you mentioned he won some Stanley Cups later in his career. He won a Stanley Cup earlier in his career with the Pittsburgh Penguins, but Carolina in 2006 was an incredible run, and Mark Recchi was one of those veteran guys that was a big part of it.
So is he your top guy in next year's eligibility class?
For me, it is.
Really? He's above a guy like Curtis Joseph?
Well, to me, Mark Recchi is like a Mike Gartner. Mike Gartner was never a guy that was perennially a guy that led the league in scoring, but he was consistent throughout his career. I forget how many 30-goal seasons Gartner had. It was 18 or something ridiculous. Mark Recchi, to me, was another one of those guys that later on in his career, he was still putting up really solid numbers, and he was a key part of some teams that won Stanley Cup. So, yeah, for me, Mark Recchi is one of those guys, and the other guy for me that I have said year after year should be in is Eric Lindros. And I wrote an article, I think it was 5 years ago, about this. If you look at Eric Lindros's numbers versus Cam Neely, a very good comparable because of the fact that Neely also had his career cut short. But Lindros's numbers for years there were amazing. And he was well over a point per game throughout his career. And again, Lindros is a guy that never won a Stanley Cup, but was good internationally at the Canada Cup and the Olympics. So,
if you're putting Recchi in, pardon me for interrupting, and if you're putting Recchi in, 1,652 games played, 1,533 points. Are you putting Dave Andrechuk in? Two Stanley Cups for Andrechuk, 1,639 games, so 13 yep. less games, just under 200 points fewer.
Yep.
I mean, if you're putting Recchi, I mean. Mark Recchi.
I think Andrechuk is a Hall of Famer. If that's the question, I do think Andrechuk deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
None of these
well.
Guys. Here's my problem, and I think this is I've had this problem with the NHL Hall of Fame for a number of years. These guys have had tremendous careers, and they're tremendously talented players. But at any point when you are watching Mark Recchi or Dave Andrechuk play hockey in the various courses of time when they pass through town or at any point, did you ever think that to yourself, man, am I glad I got a ticket to this game so I can go see Mark Recchi? I can go see future Hall of Famer Mark Recchi, or I can go see future Hall of Famer Dave Andrechuk. I think by including these guys strictly based on their numbers, you water down the Hall of Fame to some extent. Eric Lindros, a guy who doesn't have the numbers anywhere close to these guys, is a guy you'd pay money to go see. And I think there is a litmus test with the would you go pay money to see it? And I wouldn't have paid money to see Andrechuk or Recchi, but I definitely would have paid money to go see Eric Lindros in his prime. See, and he doesn't have the numbers that these guys have.
See, but my argument or counter-argument to that, Drew, would be the Hockey Hall of Fame is reserved for the greatest players who have ever played the game over their careers,
mm-hmm.
not who was the most entertaining player or who sold the most jerseys or who fans really wanted to go see. It's for the greats, the elite players of the game.
Are those guys elite players in your mind? But the numbers say they are, sure.
But over the course of that's what it's based on, right? I mean, you're not basing it on... I mean, you're basing it on what... First off, Recchi and Andrechuk were completely different players.
Yeah.
Andrechuk was the type of guy that earned his living in front of the net, tipping pucks, winning faceoffs.
Ugly goal after ugly
Recchi
goal.
Recchi was a faster guy, more of a playmaker, a guy that had a good shot off of the wing, but he was a different type of player. But it's their careers. And to me, their careers are incredible. I mean, Recchi, of all of the people that have ever played the game, mm-hmm. he is 12th all time.
I know.
So to me, you can't deny that. But let's move on here, Drew, because I'll give you my other two guys who I think should be going in this time. Theo okay. Fleury. I mean, absolutely. Theo Fleury, and I realize we've had him on the show talking about his book and all of the off-ice stuff, but what he did on the ice was incredible. And if you remember in 2002 at the Canadian Olympics, Gretzky insisted that Theron Fleury was on that team.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a big part of that team, along with others, Sakic and Yzerman and all these guys. But Theo Fleury, to me, was a guy who fans wanted to see, and they would anticipate him coming into their building. A small guy that set or paved the way, I should say, for other small players. So whether that's Marty St. Louis or Brian Gionta, I mean, Fleury was before these guys and in an age when the NHL still was clutching and grabbing and kind of was a little bit more suited for the bigger types of players like that. So to me, Theron Fleury, I mean, his numbers speak for themselves, 1,000-plus points. You know, had the Stanley Cup in 1989 with the Calgary Flames, but it's over the span of his career. He could have played a little bit longer if it wasn't for some of the off-ice issues that he had. If you remember towards the end of his career when he was with the New York Rangers,
sure.
he was leading the league in points, you know, in his early 30s. So this is a guy, to me, that we all know how good of a player he was and how good of a guy he is. But to me, Fleury's got to go in. He's been eligible since 2006. So, I mean, I don't know how he's not in the Hall of Fame already.
Is Eric Lindros in your Hall of Fame next year?
Yes, yeah.
What about Paul Kariya?
I mean, there's other players, too, that we haven't talked about. Keith Tkachuk, okay. Jeremy Roenick.
Yeah.
I mean, I think these guys are Hall of Famers.
I really don't. I mean, I respect your opinion, and you're certainly welcome to it, even though I'm right and you're wrong. But, you know, these guys are good players, and they had impressive careers, and I don't want to say, I don't want to denigrate what they did on the ice, because it was tremendously impressive. But when I'm going to the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto, and I'm looking at the plaques, and I'm looking at the world's greatest hockey players from years ago and generations ago, at no point in time am I saying, boy, that Jeremy Roenick, he was a great player, but boy, with that Jeremy Roenick, I remember X, Y, and Z from him. I just don't. I think they're in the Hall of Very Good, but if they're in the Hall of Fame, I find that it waters down the real creme de la creme of the NHL players who are in the Hall of Fame.
Right, and with Chris Osgood and Curtis Joseph, again, those are fringe guys, right? Curtis Joseph, mm-hmm. an excellent goaltender for years with St. Louis and Edmonton and Detroit. He was an excellent goaltender. Osgood obviously has the Stanley Cups. I think it's going to be a little bit tougher, for example, as opposed to Dominic Hasek, who's already in, sure. or Marty Brodeur, who, when he's eligible, will go in immediately. Again, Tkachuk, Kariya, they might not get in here, but they're certainly guys that over the course of their career, and Kariya's career was cut short a little bit, but you know, almost hit 1,000 points.
Yeah, point a game, 989.
Won the Stanley Cup in 2007 with the Anaheim Ducks, so he's got the cup. To me, he is one of the greatest players of all time, and I think if he plays 3 or 4 more years, you know, he's easily around 1,100, 1,200 points, whatever. Mm-hmm. So again, these are good debates. But as you mentioned, Drew, the 2016 Hall of Fame class might be one of the most wide open that we've seen in many years, because as I mentioned, some of the other guys aren't eligible for a couple more years. Brodeur, St. Louis, sure. I'm probably forgetting someone in there, but
you're absolutely right. So this week it'll be an interesting debate coming up for the 2016 Hockey Hall of Fame class. Let's head to break. When we come back, Bob Duff is going to join us. We'll talk about the 2015 class, which gets enshrined on Monday into the Hockey Hall of Fame. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Saturday afternoon, the 7th of November, 2:33 to be perfectly exact. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Bob Duff. Bob covers the Detroit Red Wings for the Windsor Star. He's also author of a brand new book called The 50 Greatest Red Wings, a few of whom are probably being inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame tomorrow evening in Toronto. Bob, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's always my pleasure.
Let's start with the book, Bob, 50 Greatest Red Wings. It's available at all your local booksellers and online at Amazon.ca. You know, what made you want to write this book, and you know, what did you discover in the course, pardon me, of writing this book?
Well, I think the main reason I wanted to do it was because it really hasn't been done. I mean, I looked around and looked through the years, and I've covered this team since the late 80s, and no one's ever really written a definitive, these are the best Red Wings, you know, ranking them in any specific order. I mean, there's been books, certainly tribute books to Red Wing greats, but never anybody who ranked them. And then pretty much every team's done that at some point or had it done about them. And I just thought, you know, this should be done.
Now, Bob, of course, two former Detroit Red Wings who are on that list of the top 50 Detroit Red Wings of all time, Sergei Fedorov, Nicholas Lidstrom, they're going into the Hall of Fame. No surprise there. I guess starting off with Sergei Fedorov, is he the greatest Russian player of all time?
He's certainly the most versatile Russian player of all time. I mean, how many guys, you know, of any nationality could drop back and play defense like he was able to do? And Scotty Bowman was convinced to this day, he'll tell you, if Fedorov had stayed back on defense, he would have won the Norris Trophy. He's just got so many facets to his game. He played fantastic without the puck. He could pass the puck tape to tape like as well as Lidstrom, who might be one of the best ever to do that. And just, you know, beyond that, his tremendous skills of the forward, his incredible skating ability. I mean, you really have to. And I don't know whether there is one. Fedorov did tell me he was a really bad goalie once, so maybe that's the only flaw in his game.
I think that's a reasonable. I think we'll grant him a pass on his poor goaltending performance there. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bob Duff. Bob works for the Windsor Star. He covers the Detroit Red Wings. Ezzy, my colleague, mentioned Sergei Fedorov. Nicholas Lidstrom also going into the Hall of Fame. You know, Nicholas Lidstrom did everything so well for the Detroit Red Wings on the blue line. That's why his teammates started calling him Mr. Perfect. You know, is his game, did it have to be witnessed on a regular basis to really appreciate just how good he was on the back end for the Red Wings for that many years?
Absolutely. I mean, you never were going to see him go end-to-end like a Brian Leetch. He didn't have the, you know, you wouldn't see him ripping a powerful slap shot like Shea Weber, you know, and he certainly didn't get into the physical type of altercations that a Chris Chelios would. So Lidstrom was just always in the right spot at the right time. He was like, the way they used to talk about how Gretzky knew where the puck was going to go before it got there in the attacking zone, I think Lidstrom had the same quality in the defensive zone. He always seemed to be a step ahead of the play, and he seemed to just have a knack for knowing where the puck was going to end up next. And that was one of the main reasons why he took so few penalties, because, you know, generally a defenseman gets a penalty because they get caught in a position and they got a hook or slash somebody, and he just was never out of position. So it was almost a shock when he got a penalty.
Now, Bob, earlier in his career, Sergei Fedorov won the Hart Trophy in the early 90s there, and he won the Frank Selke Trophy as well, and we all know that he was perennially among the top scorers in the NHL. But when you look at his career specifically with the Detroit Red Wings, because even though he managed to play after the Detroit Red Wings, the most success that he had was with the Red Wings. But for you, what was his best season as a member of the Detroit Red Wings?
Well, it probably, I mean, from a production standpoint, it certainly was 93-94 when he won the Hart. But I would think the first year the Wings won the Cup in 97, he really was a dominant player and at both ends of the ice. And when you talk to Fedorov, and during his career and even today, he talks first about playing the game without the puck. I mean, that was the most important thing to him. And, you know, to have that in any player, let alone, you know, a young player like he was when he first came over here, who set the example of, you know, we're going to play this game well when we don't have the puck, because let's face it, in the early 90s, that was what the Red Wings needed to learn how to do. They could score tons of goals, but their defensive game was substandard, and that's why they kept getting upset in the playoffs. And once Scotty Bowman got here, and when you had a dynamic two-way forward like Fedorov, and it kind of forced Steve Yzerman to adopt that role as well, because Yzerman was pretty much an all-offense guy in his early years of his career, and he became, you know, I would say Fedorov's equal in terms of a two-way player in the mid-90s to the end of his career, and I think a lot of that had to do with the influence of Bowman and, to some extent, Fedorov.
Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is Bob Duff. Bob covers the Detroit Red Wings for the Windsor Star. He's also author of the book 50 Greatest Red Wings. Bob, when you look at Nicklas Lidstrom, and I mean, it was a foregone conclusion that as soon as he was eligible for the Hall of Fame, he was going to be nominated for it, and you know, be elected into it. 7-time Norris Trophy winner, you know, 6 wins in 7 seasons, which is tremendous, almost mind blowing to really think about it. Also, 4 Stanley Cups. Which of those, is his greatest legacy? The 6 wins in 7 years on the Norris Trophies, or the 4 Stanley Cups?
He'd tell you the 4 Stanley Cups, but I think it's the Norris Trophies. And I actually think that, because of what we alluded to earlier, that because his game was just so quietly effective and didn't bring headlines, you know, if he had been a more flashy defenseman, he probably would have won 10 Norris Trophies, because I always thought he should have started winning them much earlier into his career than he did. And again, like you said, if you didn't see him play night after night, you just didn't realize just how good of a player he was. So to me, it'll always be, I mean, you know, you look at the list of guys who won that many Norris Trophies, and you're talking, you know, Bobby Orr, Doug Harvey, Nick Lidstrom. So, you know, 3 people out of all the defensemen that have played in the history of the NHL. So that just tells you how good he was.
You know, Bob, I think it's really interesting with Sergei Fedorov and Nicklas Lidstrom going into the Hall of Fame during the same year, former teammates, but both of these players really grew the game internationally, and you've followed the Detroit Red Wings for many years. How have you seen, especially with Lidstrom and Fedorov not being, they're retired now, but how has their impact been felt, not only internationally, but how is it still being felt in Detroit?
Well, I mean, you look at how many Swedes there are in the Red Wings and how many there have been over the years. I mean, when Lidstrom came over, he was their only Swede. And, you know, for many years, it was just him and Thomas Holmstrom. And then into the, you know, the early 2000s, Zetterberg alluded to it yesterday that, you know, when he came there was just Holmstrom and Lidstrom. And then all of a sudden there was several others. You had Franz and you had Cronwall, you had Michael Samuelson for a while. I mean, there really was a significant Swedish influence that certainly Lidström sparked. And I think when you look to Fedorov's side, you know, you weren't getting Russians out of the NHL. And I think the fact that the Wings were able to literally smuggle Fedorov out from behind the Iron Curtain kind of forced the hand of the Russians to, you know, lower the wall, to, so to speak, and start letting players come over and not have that restrictiveness on them anymore. You know, they were letting the older players come over, but once Fedorov got out and McGillney got out, you kind of had to start letting them all go because you were probably going to lose them anyway. So I think that had a significant impact in the course of the history of the NHL. And then when Bowman put together the Russian Five and they started winning Stanley Cups at a time when, you know, what people like to refer to as the dead puck era, when New Jersey won the cup with the trap and there was rapid expansion that had diluted the talent pool, and people were looking at New Jersey's style of play and saying, you know, this is a way we can win without talent. Well, Scotty Bowman bucked that trend and focused on talent and puck possession and was able to win Stanley Cups, multiple Stanley Cups, playing that way. And you could argue that he saved the excitement of the game. I mean, imagine if everybody started playing the trap and everybody kept winning the cup that way, we'd be watching some pretty ugly hockey.
Now, Bob, last segment, Drew and I were talking about who we think should get in next year for the 2016 class, and one of the guys that was brought up was Chris Osgood, who obviously won the cups in Detroit. Is he a Hall of Famer in your mind?
In my mind, I've always thought a Hall of Fame should be for the absolute elite, so there's a lot of guys that are already in the Hall of Fame that if I was running it, wouldn't be in there.
I agree.
But if you base it on who's already in there, I would say, yes, Osgood's a Hall of Famer. When you start comparing his numbers and his accomplishments to some of the other goalies that are in there, I think he definitely is one. But again, I say that's why I've always thought, to me, the Baseball Hall of Fame was kind of the ultimate Hall of Fame, because unless you were like an absolute icon and the best of your generation, you don't get in there. And I think that's what a Hall of Fame should be.
I agree with you on that, Bob. We'll let you go on this last question. It's about another inductee this coming Monday into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That's Peter Karmanos. Most people know him mostly as the owner of the Hartford Whalers and then, of course, now the Carolina Hurricanes. But Peter Karmanos has had a tremendous impact on amateur and youth hockey in Michigan alongside Mike Ilitch. The two of them are fierce rivals going back to youth hockey in Michigan. Can you, for our audience, sort of talk about the impact that Peter Karmanos has had on hockey at the grassroots level in Michigan?
Well, the fact that he owned the Windsor Spitfires for a while and then for a long time the Plymouth Whalers, I've got to know Peter pretty well over the years. And this is a guy who, as you say, has just dedicated his life to the game. And basically it was because his kid wanted to play hockey and he never seemed to have time to get to the rink because he was so busy at work. So he thought, well, if I just organize my own league, I can go see my son play whenever I want. And that's basically what he did. That's how CompuWare got its start, that he decided he wanted to see his kids play, and he put together a league and then grew into, you know, one of the most powerful amateur hockey organizations in North America, certainly in the United States. It was right up at the top. And then you had, as you say, Little Caesars, which is the Ilitch empire, and they're also a very powerful and significant minor hockey, youth hockey organization in Michigan. And those two for years battled. So in 2002, when it ended up being Carolina and Detroit in the Stanley Cup, the whole backstory of the rivalry, as you say, between those two, I mean, that was Karmanos who made that ridiculous offer sheet to Fedorov in 98 that Ilitch had to match. You know, they were constantly one-upping each other, and it really made for some entertaining stories to write.
No doubt about that. Bob Duff is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bob, really appreciate your time this afternoon. The book is called The 50 Greatest Red Wings. It's available in paperback on November 10th, which is Tuesday. You can pre-order it on Amazon. Bob, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Take care, Bob. Thanks very much. Set the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Bob Duff of the Windsor Star for joining us to talk about the Detroit Red Wings and their inductees into the Hockey Hall of Fame coming up Monday. You can, of course, catch the entire ceremony on TSN. K case you missed that interview or any of the interviews earlier in the show with Dave Isaac of the Camden Courier-Post talking about the Philadelphia Flyers, tonight's Jets opponent, David Pagnotta, editor-in-chief of thefourthperiod.com, or Dave Jamieson from our sister station TSN 1260 in Edmonton. They're available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and of course on our website, IllegalCurve.com. One final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290.
Rapid fire.
Minnesota Wild forward Zach Parise was injured Thursday night after taking a hit from Nashville Predators forward James Neal. At first, there was fear that Parise could be lost for a significant period of time, but it appears he will be only out on a week-by-week basis, so not the worst-case scenario. Playing in the hugely competitive Central Division, do you think Parise's absence will cause the Wild to take a tumble down the division standings?
I don't think so, Drew. There's a lot of depth on this Minnesota Wild team. Zach Parise is one of the best left wingers in the NHL, and he was playing really well, 9 points in 12 games. So it's a big loss, but they have other players in the lineup that can pick up the offense. But it's one of those situations. I know we always talk about injuries, you know, in the NHL, and it's never good when you have one of these players out of the lineup. But especially on a team like this, who's kind of got a mix of veterans and younger players. So you're talking Charlie Coyle, Nino Niederreiter, Jason Zucker has been off to a good start. If you remember, he got the early goal in the first period against the Jets a couple weeks back.
3 seconds in or whatever it was.
Yeah, fastest goal in Wild history. So, you know, they're going to miss Parise. He's on the top line of the Minnesota Wild, but I don't think they're going to go into a tailspin here. And it looks like he's only going to be out 1 to 2 weeks.
Yeah. The Montreal Canadiens and Boston Bruins have released their special jerseys that they're going to wear at the 2016 NHL Winter Classic in Foxborough, Massachusetts. Which of the two jerseys is nicer, and what are your thoughts on their respective jerseys?
I don't want to get in trouble with Bruins fans. I like both of them. And the Bruins and the Canadiens are both original six teams, as well as we know. But, you know, you've seen over the years some variations from the Bruins, if you remember the Bear jersey. I actually like that jersey. But if I have to pick one, I'd probably pick the Montreal Canadiens jersey. But I really like that Bruins jersey, too.
This Canadiens jersey, it just was released yesterday. You can you can Google it. It's an absolute beauty.
Yep.
I mean, I love it. The Bruins jersey is nice. It doesn't do anything great for me. I don't find it unique. But this Canadiens jersey is gorgeous. According to Darren Drager, the NHL is supposedly set to overhaul the All-Star game by introducing some version of a 3-on-3 mini tournament. Is it time for the NHL to just do away with the All-Star game in its entirety, rather than continue to tinker with a game that has an absence of emotion and competitiveness?
Well, it shouldn't have that much emotion or competitiveness because it's an All-Star game.
So why bother playing it?
I mean, it's for the fans. And I
do
think
the fans enjoy it?
I think they do. I mean, you're going to see the game in Nashville this year. A great city, a city that I've never been able to visit, but it's always been on my top list for American cities.
I've been there. There's a reason why they call it Smashville. It's fairly fitting.
You're more well-traveled than I am.
That's true. I well-read, more well-traveled.
Yeah, everything.
a lot of more well things altogether.
But, you know,
well-versed.
The All-Star game, you know, Drew, your question really is about the 3-on-3. I have no problem with going to 3-on-3. I mean, at the end of the day, the game doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. So why not have 3-on-3 and really let the offensive skill shine?
The game just ended while we were here in studio. The Buffalo Sabres defeated the Vancouver Canucks by a 3-2 score in an afternoon start. That game was prominent because it was for the first time since February 25th, 2014, when he was a member of the Sabres, goaltender Ryan Miller started a game in Buffalo. After he was traded from the Sabres to St. Louis, the Blues didn't play in Buffalo, and he missed last year's game as a member of the Canucks with an injury. What's your most prominent memory of Ryan Miller's time as a Buffalo Sabres player?
Well, it's got to be what he accomplished in the playoffs. And the year that Buffalo Sabres went on a miraculous run there, I want to say it was 2007, 2008, Danny Briere was there. Ryan Miller was one of the best goaltenders in the game. So for me, it was the way he played. And Drew, as probably a second greatest memory of Ryan Miller while a member of the Buffalo Sabres, was the 2010 Olympics as a member of Team USA. He was incredible.
Silver medal.
We all remember that that performance, Roberto Luongo, pardon me, against Ryan Miller. It was a great matchup. So, and again, Ryan Miller, now is playing a lot of hockey for the Vancouver Canucks. He's doing really well for the Canucks, a very young team. So he's still an elite goalie, in my opinion.
Appearing on a Boston radio station, Bruins team president Cam Neely said the following about Tyler Seguin and his time in Boston. Quote, "I think looking back, we probably could have done some things differently with Tyler. You've got a young kid coming in. Maybe we could have handled his living arrangements a little different and stuff like that that we've talked about over the years. It's something we certainly are addressing currently, and in the future, we will continue to address." Which Bruins trade is worse? The one that sent Joe Thornton to San Jose, or the one that sent Tyler Seguin to Dallas?
Well, they're both terrible.
They're both probably up there in two of the top 5-10 worst trades in the NHL history.
Yeah, and the circumstances at the time were just really ready for the Boston Bruins to make those trades. I'm going to say the Tyler Seguin trade was worse, even though Joe Thornton, if you remember, won the Conn Smythe, pardon me, the Art Ross Trophy in his first year with the San Jose Sharks. I think he had 96 assists. I forget exactly what it was, or if he didn't win it, he was right up there. That was the year Jonathan Chichu had 56 goals. But, I mean, Tyler Seguin is an elite forward, right? He's one of the best centers in the game. So I'll probably say the Seguin trade was worse, but the Joe Thornton trade was also pretty bad. Who, Marco Sturm, Scott Thornton? Those
yeah,
two guys?
Marco Sturm, Scott yeah. Thornton. I mean, it was just an awful trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, bad trades in Buffalo. Final question, pardon me, in Boston. Final question and then rapid fire on this Saturday afternoon. On Wednesday, Maple Leafs coach Mike Babcock said that if the NHL wants to increase scoring, they will need to increase the size of the nets as the goaltending equipment has become too large. Asked about Mike Babcock's comments, Sidney Crosby felt that the solution isn't to make the nets larger, rather that the equipment size needs to be better regulated. Seeing as how the NHL appears hesitant to truly regulate the size of goaltender equipment, would you be okay with the NHL making the nets larger?
I'm in the camp that thinks that the nets should stay the same size and the equipment should be smaller. And I don't know how popular or how much headway this has made in the last few years. I know every time this has been brought up at the GM meetings, it doesn't go very far as increasing the net size,
mm-hmm.
because it then becomes a question of, well, how much bigger do you want to make the nets? But maybe this is something that they're going to look at more seriously, because I think up until this point, it's been something that has been talked about but hasn't really moved anywhere.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
I know you always cheer, so what's your cheer?
I'm going to cheer Lee Stempniak. He's a guy that said he wanted to come back to Winnipeg, but he wasn't re-signed by Winnipeg for obvious reasons, youngsters coming in to play for the Winnipeg Jets. But he's got 10 points for the New Jersey Devils. He's playing on the top line for the Devils. Zajac's also got 10 points. He had a couple of points
yesterday. Beat the Blackhawks last night.
Good for Lee Stempniak. Goes to New Jersey on a PTO, ends up getting signed, and he's flourishing.
I'm going to cheer a guy who doesn't get cheered very often in the city of Winnipeg, Evander Kane. And the reason why is he took 60 kids from the Boys and Girls Club of Buffalo yesterday evening to a Dave & Buster's. He also provided them with a shirt signed by Evander Kane and a ticket to today's Sabres-Canucks game. So for a guy who gets a lot of slings and arrows in the city of Winnipeg, he did a good thing for the community in Buffalo, and I will cheer him as a result for that.
Did he give them a tracksuit?
I don't think so. He gave them a T-shirt, but that's, you couldn't have just let it go, could you? Couldn't take the high road, could you? That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guest, Dave Isaac of the Camden Courier-Post, David Pagnotta, editor-in-chief of thefourthperiod.com, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton, and Bob Duff of the Windsor Star. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, Keener Jerseys, and Royal Sports. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris and producer Jesse, for my colleague Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next on TSN 1290.